Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be talking about the NBA as we are ramping up into the offseason. We will also be talking about some of the new contracts players have signed. We'll also touch on the NBA draft day one as well. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news and updates. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from. I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. This is one of my favorite style of shows, the Insta release shows. Also, these shows are great for me because I don't get to talk much pure basketball, right? And football is my number one sport. You guys know I'm a football coach. So football is my number one sport. But I do enjoy basketball. I like the machinations of basketball. I like the moves, the drama, the kind of the roster control that a basketball player has, so on and so forth. So I do enjoy a good basketball topic. I do enjoy a good basketball discussion. However, I don't get a chance to talk much pure basketball pretty much at any point. And this is a show post-NBA Finals. We're kind of moved away from the Finals now. Oklahoma City had their parade yesterday. So we're officially putting a nice little string and bow on the 2024-2025 season. And we're officially moving into the 2025-2026 season. Before I go too further, remember, it's like you heard in the intro, in case you skipped it and skipped that amazing song by B-Roy. Remember to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. And make sure that you follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports. Follow your breaking news, updates, and coverage. But let's get into it. So we're going to break down the beginning of the 2025-2026 season in three sections. So first, we're going to talk about trades. And if those trades have already kind of finished. And by the meaning, finish. So somebody traded, let's say, like, for instance, we got to talk about KD. So KD to Houston involved the 10th overall pick. That pick's already been drafted. So we're going to mention that player's name, what that pick turned into. And then there's a couple other trades that have happened that the picks are already been kind of cashed in on. So we will talk about that as well. And then we'll go to our new deal. So some players have opted in, opted out, and signed new contracts. And then we'll discuss NBA draft first round reactions as well. This will not be a multi-segment show, so we're going to just go from topic to topic. However, today's episode is brought to you by Next Gen Cornerstone Consulting. Relatively small company, but they're a faith-based nonprofit assistant. So whether you need help in grant writing, strategic planning, business development, Next Gen Cornerstone Consulting is where you would want to get all of your help in that aspect. That is where you want to look. Their social media handle, their Instagram is at @nextgen_cornerstone. So again, it is @nextgen_cornerstone for getting your grant writing, strategic planning, business development needs. That is where you would want to go. So let's get into it. We are starting off with the trades. So Kevin Durant, as we discussed on last podcast episode, quickly, we didn't really get into it, but I mean, we got into it a little bit, but you know, that trade is now effectively done, in my opinion. So Kevin Durant was traded to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Dylan Brooks, Jalen Green, the 10th overall pick that became Kaman Maliich. Excuse me if I mispronounced that incorrectly. The big center out of Duke, and 5 second round picks. So 5 second round picks, of course, are going to stretch out over multiple years. We'll look back in, you know, years time and wonder if, you know, one of those picks becomes Nikola Jokic, then we'll discuss those 5 seconds. Otherwise, over the course of human history, those picks will probably get faded off the, probably get faded off the discussion point. It'll probably end up being Dylan Brooks, Jalen Green, second, the 10th overall pick, again, that became the big center out of Duke. And then no one would discuss the 5 seconds ever again. And then, you know, just kind of seeing reactions over the past few days, that trade has been deemed of either kind of bold by Houston, not gotten enough by Phoenix, or Kevin Durant kind of trying to get a ring one last time. And I think KD looked around his options, and I think he believes, well, he knows. I mean, he's staying in the West, but he, you know, he's looking at, it's hard in Minnesota. Like, that's interesting. Ownership's changing, and Minneapolis in the world's best city. It's cold. He's been in warm weather every stop except for Brooklyn. Because he got drafted to Seattle, but he was only in Seattle for the year. And then he go to Oklahoma City. And then in Oklahoma City, it's relatively warm. I mean, that gets hot in the summer. And then it's Golden State in California, San Francisco, California. Then it's Brooklyn. That's cold. And especially because the NBA is a, you know, it's a cold league. It's a winter league. Yes, it finishes in the summer, but it starts around October. And you play a lot of November, December, January, February, March kind of games. And in places like New York, March is still chilly. Like, it's cold. You have your heater on from October through March in certain parts of the NBA country, especially when you get into your Torontos and your Michigans and your Milwaukees and your Minnesotas. Like, when you play in those places, it's cold from October to March. And it gets cold everywhere, but New Orleans winter is like 4.5 weeks. You get a couple of false winters, we get cold spells, but, you know, we don't get snow like that, you know, in Louisiana. We don't get Arctic blasts like that in Louisiana. Like if it snows in Louisiana, you're off. Like, that's it. The planes aren't flying, the roads aren't accessible, like, that's it. In Minnesota, it's like, oh, it snowed today? Cool, the snowplow came before, put salt on your tires or put chains on you and go to work. Like, it's a different vibe. It's a different environment in those places. And ultimately, Kevin Durant chose to go to Texas. No state tax. He loves Ime Udoka. Him and Ime Udoka have developed a great relationship over the years. He loves Ime Udoka, which for KD is huge, so on and so forth. If you're Phoenix, you kind of didn't solve your problems through this trade directly. Jalen Green's not a point guard. He didn't have a center. Now you added a center and a big gift from Duke. He's a developmental guy, but his upside is insane. He's a 7'1", 7'2", with like a 7'7 wingspan. He's got decent touch on his jumper. People have seen his jump shot. He was a dunker at Duke. He was 71% from the field. He was like second in the country in dunks. He was a dunker at Duke, and he's an elite rim protector potentially. So good move by Houston to get Kevin Durant, because you don't need Kevin Durant to be great. 48 minutes. You need Kevin Durant to avoid five. Remember those slumps that they would go in the Golden State series? And I'd be like, you know, they're like, man, Houston hadn't scored in 4.5 minutes. And they've only, you know, they went from a 2-point lead to now they're down two. Yeah, I mean, for those 4.5 minutes, the team only scored four. Houston just has to avoid that, where instead of that 4.5 minutes being 0-4 in favor of the other team, it's 8-4 in favor of Houston. So now they've grinded you for 6 minutes or 4 and 4.5 minutes. And then by the time, you know, you're just like worn down and when the offense kicked back up again, now they're still in front of you. You need Kevin Durant to avoid those droughts. And you need Kevin Durant 3 minutes left in the game, up, you know, 3 minutes left in the game, down one or down four. that ball gets swung to Kevin Durant and you get us out of here. And as I think Ime Udoka is going to be great for him as far as his coaching. And Ime Udoka is a culture setter. KD don't have to be a leader of a team. Ime Udoka is there for that. So that's going to be great for Kevin Durant as far as his career, in my opinion. All right, the Boston Celtics were under mandate to get out of contractual hell. They were staring at a $500 million payroll, including salaries plus luxury tax, with Jason Tatum having a torn Achilles, and I think missing the entire next season. If he doesn't miss the entire next season, he's going to miss a vast majority of it. You're not going to be in title contention. So, what do the Boston Celtics do? They do a couple of trades. First trade they pull off is Drew Holiday, sending him back to Portland. Thinking in your head, Drew Holiday never played for Portland. Yes, would it be exactly correct? The last time Drew Holiday played was a Portland Trailblazer. He was there for about a week. He never went to a facility. He wasn't even there for a week. It was part of the Milwaukee deal. They were shedding salaries. Drew Holiday ended up being one of those sheds. They trade Drew Holiday to Milwaukee. They trade Drew Holiday from Milwaukee to Portland. Portland redirects Drew Holiday to Boston. Championship later, Boston's now sending Drew Holiday back to Portland. In exchange, Portland sends Anfernee Simons on an expiring contract and 2 second-round picks. This doesn't do anything for any winning, but it immediately saves Boston a lot of money. For Portland, you get a veteran in the room. You get a decent defender in the room. You get somebody that Chauncey Billups wants. This could be the vet that kind of Chauncey Billups would know about. So being him, Ime Udoka, J.J. Redick, trying to think of some other former player coaches. Those guys were, you know, in the league when the vet still exists. Where he may not be nearly the height of his powers, if he ever had powers, you know. But he's nowhere near his prime. However, he may not give you anything. Remember when Giannis has him for the Heat? Like, by the time that second era of the Heat happened with the big three, Udonis Haslem was just there. He was the tough guy in the locker room to make sure things went smooth. Like, he was just there. He was the fouler. Like, if somebody hard fouled LeBron or D-Wade, Udonis Haslem was checking in. He was putting somebody on the floor. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was, that was his job, right? I don't think Drew Holiday is going to be the enforcer, but I think he will be the leader. I think, and, you know, he's got a lot of money left on his desk. He's got about 3 years, $100 million left on his contract. It's a pretty bad contract for most teams. However, for Portland, if you're Chauncey Billups, a lot of my team is young. So having a guy like Drew Holiday, family man, good man, he constantly giving in the community he plays in. He constantly being a role model. You never hear him about him in trouble. You never hear him about him in a bad light. So on and so forth. That is worth the money to just have him teach and coach. And he's still going to give you 20 minutes a night, 22 minutes a night, you know, 12, 4, and 3. Two good steals, and like that's gonna be his job. In the end of the game, the close game, he's gonna be on the floor because he can still play. It just with Boston, if Tatum was healthy, he's still in Boston. I firmly believe that. But because Boston needed to shed salaries, they dumped him, and they also dumped Kristaps Porzingis in a 3-team deal with the Atlanta Hawks and the Brooklyn Nets. So Kristaps Porzingis, how it ended up checking out, Kristaps Porzingis in a second round pick to the Atlanta Hawks, Terrence Mann and a 22nd overall pick, which ended up becoming Drake Powell out of North Carolina, goes to Brooklyn, and George Niang and a second round pick ends up in Boston. So again, a purely salary cap move. Now move was, it's three parts. So for Brooklyn, you picked up an asset, you ended up drafting a player with a great, perfect, fine, right? Beautiful, right? Good job, Brooklyn. Okay, so that's pretty much it on the Brooklyn side. For the Atlanta Hawks side, this was a strategic maneuver as well. And why is it a maneuver of, they had a 20-something million dollar $25 million, I believe, trade exception, $25.9 million trade exception from the DeJounte Murray trade. Kristaps Porzingis' salary is more than that trade exception. So they can't use the trade exception on Kristaps Porzingis, which means they still have said trade exception. So, and they're $30 million under the tax. I mean, honestly, that is impressive GMing by the Atlanta Hawks. And they had another good move that, you know, the Atlanta Hawks is also getting credit for that we'll discuss later. But impressive GMing by the Atlanta Hawks that you still have your fat trade exception, plus you still have $30 million under the tax to maneuver. And then George Niang and a second-round pick ends up in Boston. George Niang is irrelevant. Human walk, I'm talking trade exception. But what the Boston Celtics did do was shed their salary cap ridiculous as far as what they were able to accomplish. There was a purely a salary cap dump. Everybody in America, everybody in the world knew it, that the Boston Celtics were dumping salary. Plain and simple, they were dumping salary. So they end up shedding, thanks to the two deals, they end up shedding over $210 million in luxury tax bonus. They shedded nearly $250 million in luxury tax penalty. Instead of going from over 500 for their total bill, they were around 280 something as far as what they were having to pay now to deal with, having to pay now with their roster. Now, again, Jason Tatum's probably out for the year. Not gonna have Jason Tatum. Let's just start off with that, right? So doing that, knowing that, and still being able to make these maneuvers is quite impressive, Jimmy. Shout out Brad Stevens. So that's because Boston in the last pre-draft trade didn't involve picks. We can talk about it quickly. My New Orleans Pelicans traded CJ McCollum, Kelly Olynyk, and a future second round pick to the Washington Wizards for Jordan Poole, Sadiq Bey, and the number 40th overall pick in tonight's second round of the NBA draft. I like the trade. I don't love it. Now, I like the trade by itself. I don't love it by itself. Now, considering what we did later in the night, I love the trade because it kind of makes more sense. However, Jordan Poole, to me, is going to be a candidate for Sixth Man of the Year. I don't think he starts in New Orleans. I think he has the potential to finish. So I think that two-guard spot in New Orleans, and we'll talk about it a little bit more, but I think a two-guard spot in New Orleans is going to be a starter, not a finisher. Think Andre Roberson for the Thunder. Think whoever started in front of Manu Ginobili for the Spurs. That person would start the game, but he wouldn't finish it. And I think that piece is going to be rotational. Again, we'll get into their rotations later. For the Washington Wizards, I don't know what you're doing. It's like they went super vet, because now they have CJ McCollum. He's expiring. Marcus Smart, I think, was also expiring. And they have Chris Middleton, who's expiring. So they have three veteran expiring contracts. They're set up for $100 million in cap space. That's a lot of money. Now, granted, you have to convince somebody to go to Washington, D.C. Which, if you guys know anything about LeBron trying to get people to go to Cleveland, that's harder to do than just saying, oh, it's NBA 2K. I got $100 million in cap space. I'm just going to sign the top two free agents. Nope. No. That's harder to do than it is on NBA 2K. I assure you. I promise you. But the Washington Wizards now have a good, solid core of young guys. Zachary Risacher. They ended up in the draft picking up Trey Johnson out of Texas. So they have a decent core of young players, and they're also adding, they have a lot of veteran experience with your CJ McCollum's, Chris Middleton, and Marcus Smarts, trying to hope to keep those blowouts away. Like, even if you start the young guys and you say, okay, you know, Marcus Smart, CJ McCollum, and Chris Middleton on the floor together, that's going to be, they're going to hold your second unit down. They may not explode your second unit, but they're going to keep as two good defenders or one and a half good defenders, one good shooter, one good ball handler. Like, they're spread out as far as their vets where they can really handle a situation in Washington. And then our draft day trade, one we're going to discuss here that involves a player. It is Mark Williams to the Phoenix Suns. Mark Williams, yes, same Mark Williams that the Los Angeles Lakers said no to on the physical. He is now traded. He is traded to the Phoenix Suns in exchange for the 29th pick that became Liam McNeely. Guard out of Connecticut. He's going to Charlotte and a lightly protected first round pick. So that first round pick is lightly protected. I think it's protected picks 1 through 5, and it is the least favorable out of several teams. So it's weird in the NBA you can trade like least favorable picks or most favorable picks. And again, we'll get that comes up later. But it is the least favorable 2029 first round pick of the Cavs, Jazz, and Timberwolves. Yep, a little bit of contract news. Austin Reeves, the Lakers offered him the max they can offer him, 4 years, $90 million. He declined it. He goes to true free agency. He's not held by his draft status as far as money he can make. Shout out Austin Reeves. He deserves more than that. The Lakers are going to pay him more than that. They'll still have the ability to add the 5th year since he's going to go in free agency. And I think they might be able to go up to like 150 for him. So kudos to Austin Reeves. Get your money. Get your money, fella. But again, Mark Williams is headed to Phoenix. Now, that gives Phoenix two centers acquired in the last, 12 hours, 24 hours. Again, the center from Duke and then Mark Williams, both are headed to Phoenix to try and fix their center problem. But now we're going to transition into the NBA deals. Quickly, we're going to go through them and then we'll get to the draft reaction to close this thing out. But our deals that have happened is Chris Middleton picked up his $33.3 million player option. I am sure, and I almost mean 10,000% sure, that the Wizards would have not wanted him to do that. They would much rather, I think they would have given him $33 million just to spread it over 2 years. We'll get something like what Fred VanVleet ended up doing. We'll talk about him as well. But like if you were to say, okay, I set a $33 million for one, I'll take $40 million for two or something just to spread the money out and eat less of it. But also Washington's in a position where I'm saying that for financial reasons, but Washington's not trying to win this year. Not really. So truly, they don't care if they give him a bunch of money to Chris Middleton this year because they come off of him entirely next season. So maybe ultimately Chris Middleton picking up the option may have been best for both sides. He gets a bunch of money in 1 year. They come off his contract next year. It's sort of like whenever NFL players with a franchise tag. Like, I don't necessarily like the franchise tag because of the you could do it more than once, but it gives you a whole bunch of money at one time. Right? And players don't like the franchise tag. 3 for 27 or 1 for 27 is still 27. That's get all of it at one time. So I think that's, definitely something to look at in Washington is Chris Middleton picking up his option. Daniel Gafford agreed to a new 3-year, $54 million plus contract with the Dallas Mavericks. He has a couple of incentives, I think, that can raise the value to 60, but he's going to go 3-year, $54 million plus contract with the Dallas Mavericks. Matisse Thybulle picked up his player option with the Portland Trailblazers worth $11.5 million. This is the contract he signed in Philly before getting moved, if memory serves me correctly. Kyrie Irving declined his $43 million player option and re-ups with the team for 3 years, $119 million. Now, he could have gotten a bigger contract as far as a max. I think he did what he did in order to give the team the most amount of flexibility, because by going to that number, it allows the team to hold their exceptions, that they don't burn off player exceptions and mid-levels and whatever they had exception-wise. By going 3 years, 119, he still gets he gets his last big deal in the NBA, and he was able to give the team some flexibility, especially because he's going to be out for a while. They can possibly use that $5.7 million exception for a Chris Paul, for a D'Angelo Russell, for a Dennis Schroeder, somebody, a veteran point guard that can hold it down, and they wouldn't have an issue that once Kyrie comes back and is healthy, sliding in and running that second unit. Fred VanVleet, referenced him a few minutes ago, he had a $43 million team option that was declined, and instead they agreed on a 2-year, $50 million contract with a player option on the second year. Kyrie has a player option in the 3rd year of his deal. But a 2-year, $50 million contract with a player option for year 2. They basically, for cap reasons, took his 43 and divided it by two and added a little kicker. He still gets his money. It just divided over 2 years. And again, he gets a baby bump kicker of $6 million for his troubles of having to divide his money over 2 years. And then John Collins, with a lot of uncertainty happening in Utah with his future, picks up his $26.5 million player option that he got from Atlanta when he was in Atlanta before ultimately being traded to Utah. And now we're going to move into the NBA draft. The top of the draft, relatively boring. What I mean by that is the first two picks were pretty much as we expected. Cooper Flagg went number one. Dylan Harper went number two. Now, the interesting part about the draft started at number three. Now, I will say, before I get into that, this is the first draft with multiple, I remember, like top 18-year-olds. Because Jeremiah Fears and Cooper Flagg both reclassified and up a year. And, like, Cooper Flagg just turned 18. Cooper Flagg and Jeremiah Fears will barely be 19 when the NBA season starts. Because they were both supposed to be high school class of 2025, not first round pick class of 2025. They both came up 1 year to play in college basketball early to get to the NBA even faster. So shout out to them for being able to do it. But the top of the draft was relatively 22, relatively quiet. VJ Edgecombe, number three to Philadelphia. I think that was Ace Bailey. And I think Ace Bailey, if he doesn't cancel his workout in Philly, I think he ends up there. Con Nipel, Charlotte from Duke. So Duke has two of the top four. The second Rutgers star, Ace Bailey, comes in at number five to Utah. His reaction to the draft, I mean, he looked like somebody. He just stared at the crowd. Like, there was no smile. There was no excitement. Reportedly, he wanted Washington, New Orleans, or Brooklyn. That is where he wanted to go. And he knew he was going to go. And those teams pick 7, 8, 9. He knew he was going to end up at 6, 7, 8. I'm sorry. He knew he was going to end up in one of those spots. He just knew it. And he wanted to go to Washington, Brooklyn, or New Orleans. I mean, it was wide. Now, New Orleans doesn't necessarily fit in that trend. But, like, Washington's a big city. It's Washington, D.C. It's a big market. Also, a lot of opportunities there. New Orleans, fun city, not the world's biggest market, however, but a fun city. Brooklyn's a huge media market. So I'm sure he went to college basketball at Rutgers in New Jersey. So he's used to being up there. I don't know why New Orleans was on his list. I would have loved to hear him explain it. One of those things we'll never get to know now. But ultimately, he ends up going fifth to Utah. So when Washington goes, Trey Johnson, guard out of Texas. My New Orleans Pelicans go Jeremiah Fields out of Oklahoma. Brooklyn at eight picks their first of four guards. Igor Demon, guard out of BYU. Colin Murray Boyles out of South Carolina. Forward. He goes to Toronto. And then the big fella out of Duke, Kyman Malich, goes to the Houston Rockets from Duke. He was not happy. So, another person not happy about their pick. The Colin Murray Boyles, Toronto picks him. And he says the F word before hugging his parents. Like, he didn't want to go to Toronto. It's these young guys, man, and it's not a bad thing. These guys, first of all, are financially liberated. They are not dependent on the NBA for their money. As far as, like, you know, VJ Edgecombe is different, but I'm sure he had a pretty decent, I'm pretty sure his mama. So he told the story after the draft that for 7 years of his life, he lived on a generator with no electricity. Like, his mom had to do all kinds of stuff to feed them. When he got to Baylor, she wasn't living off a generator, right? But, you know, if they gave him $200,000, he could have stayed in the dorm, bought her an apartment or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever. But there's less and less of those stories. Like, Cooper Flagg had money, right? Like, some of these guys had families had money. But, like, it's less and less of the LeBrons who he said, like, if I was going to college, I was going for free because my mama wasn't going to be on Section 8 housing no more. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. Like, there's less and less of those I had to make it to get my family out stories juxtaposed to just they're really talented basketball players. But also, these guys are making a lot of money in college and living in a place of their choosing for a coach of their choosing as the best player on the court a lot of the times. So, it, you know, Kyler Murray Boyles F-bombed it. When he got picked by Toronto. Ace Bailey looked like somebody stole his best friend when he was picked by Utah. It's a different level. It's a different prospect we're dealing with. Gone are the days of the grateful player. You know, unless you were like a 50. Like, if you're a top NBA pick, you're probably a top high school player. So you've been making money for a year or so. Like, you've got money. Like, you're no longer, you know, you're not grateful in the NBA anymore. Like, you're excited. But you're not, thank you for picking me and saving me. Like, I've already been picked and saved in college. Right? Like I'm past that point, right? But I'll talk about Brooklyn. Brooklyn had an interesting night that apparently a lot of people laughed at because they had 5 picks in the first round. In this first round, which in football, my God, you're like winning. You're beyond winning the draft. You have 5 first round picks in football. You're expected to draft 5 starters. Like, you're going to get a – even if picks are like playoff picks, that's a receiver, that's a lineman, that's an edge, that's a corner. Like, and you picked up 5 first, like, no, like you're GM legend level with 5 firsts in the NFL. In the NBA, logically, people thought they were going to trade, package those picks either come up or package those picks for a player. Like, you're not going to pick 5 people. The Brooklyn Nets picked 5 players. 4 of them was guards. The best player on your team, in my opinion, in Brooklyn is Cam Thomas, who's the guard. So you loaded up your guard room. I don't know what Brooklyn was doing. I have no idea what Brooklyn was doing. To me, Kamen Mihaljevic would have been great there. You got Nick Claxton, but Nick Claxton's been a heavy target of trade rumors. To me, that would have been a good spot for Kamen. I mean, you know, just looking at it, Derrick Queen would be, again, another big. There was a lot of centers went. They stuck and picked, and they picked 5 guards. Many people laughed at them. But the most controversial trade of the night was my New Orleans Pelicans. At the time, when the trade immediately happened, I still think it's a good trade, but we'll talk about it. The time trade immediately happened, I went, oh, wow, New Orleans has flown up. So the trade was they traded a 2026 unprotected first round pick to be the best of the Milwaukee or New Orleans pick 2026 and something else in order to get they traded the 23rd pick, which ended up becoming Asa Newell, forward out of Georgia. They traded the number 23 pick, who became Asanora, and a 2026 unprotected first round pick, the best pick of either Milwaukee or New Orleans, to come up from 23 to 13 to draft Derrick Queen, the center out of Maryland. Now, here's where a lot of the discourse came. A lot of the discourse came, Nick Wright called it one of the worst trades in the last 5 years. Bill Simmons said one of the worst trades in the last decade. I mean, people are literally like, what the fuck is New Orleans doing? The ESPN article spoke about it as well. Like, New Orleans, I mean, they potentially traded a top 3 pick to come up from the middle of the non-lottery to at the edge of the lottery to get their player. Now, here's what I'm willing to say. I'm willing to take this twofold before I get into my opinion. The trade is successful if that pick is worse. It's 10 or worse. Let's be honest. Also, we have been dealing with David Griffin. David Griffin is a war chest GM. What I mean by a war chest GM is he stockpiles assets. He stockpiles pieces. He stockpiles picks, etc. Builds the war chest to either make a big splash move or saying one of these war chest items going to hit on their own. That's what a war chest GM is. Joe Dumars is an aggressive GM. He's a empty the coffer GM. He's a guy that says, okay, president of basketball operations, if I am going to run this team, I'm going to run it for today and this year, not for 2 years later. So Derrick Queen was a lottery pick. Like, he was a 8-9 overall kind of guy. Same thing with Jeremiah Fields. fears. Most people thought that the New Orleans pick was going to come down to either Jeremiah Fears or Derek Queen at 7. So when it got to 7, that's exactly what the choice was. They ended up drafting Jeremiah Fears. So they ended up working out a deal. And according to Dumars, they started calling teams at 8, trying to make the deal. It was like, we're going to come right back up because we identified Derek Queen as our guy. So they were trying to, every time somebody got on the clock, New Orleans called, trying to make a deal. Finally, they made a deal with Atlanta, and they trade, like I said, the 2026 unprotected first and number 23, which again became Asa Newell or Newell for the rights to Derek Queen, basically. Here's what I'm going to say. I think it was a good idea. I think it was a good trade. There's only 3 ways that next season goes for the Bucks and the Pelicans. And 2 of them are net positives for New Orleans. Option number 1 for the way this season can go is both teams make the playoffs. Both the Bucks and the Pelicans make the playoffs. And I kind of, for the East is weak. Yes, he doesn't have Dame Lillard, but the East is weak. When I broke down the Pelicans, the West, Oklahoma City, Denver, Lakers, Houston, and Spurs, and the Timberwolves are the lock teams to me. Those 6 are getting in. I think the play-in is going to feature some combination of Clippers, Dallas. Dallas is health-dependent because, you know, Kyrie's off a good chunk of the season. If AD goes down, you're just a bad basketball team. The Clippers have a James Harden problem they have to figure out. And then the Warriors, they're 1 more year older, they're 1 more, you know, whatever. So those to me are the, you know, let's call it 7 to 8 teams that are playoff play-in in the West. That leaves New Orleans, Portland, Phoenix, Utah, Sacramento, Memphis. In order for New Orleans to be a playoff team, they just have to be better than Portland, who's bad, Phoenix, awful, Utah, trying to lose, Sacramento, LOL, Memphis, who dumped Desmond Bane and did nothing else. So those teams, all New Orleans has to do to be better than those teams. And they're the 8th seed, and this trade is irrelevant because then Milwaukee gets in, and that's, you know, it becomes the 16th, 17th, 18th over pick, and, you know, it's whatever. Both teams are bad is the second option. And so that would be a situation where instead of the number 2 overall pick, let's say both teams are awful, and Milwaukee's pick ends up 2, and New Orleans ends up 4. No harm, no foul. You still pick at 4. You just don't pick at 2. No harm, no foul. You know, and honestly, at the moment, there's no real standout number 1. So even if it's 1 and 5, yeah, you don't have the number 1 pick, but I'm pretty sure Milwaukee, unless they're trading Giannis, isn't going to pick at number 1. Now, you would hold as a big asset and control who gets it. So true, but and ultimately, it doesn't help either franchise to pick at number 1. No harm, no foul, right? If both teams are bad, both teams have been in the top 5, no harm, no foul. The only way it becomes a problem is if one of the teams are bad. So let's say, especially if it's New Orleans. So let's just say, worst case scenario, Milwaukee goes out, they sneak into the playoffs, you know, because Giannis is Giannis, and they get the 7th seed, right? They're in the playoffs. So their pick is 17-18. And then New Orleans is horrible. Zion is injured again. Trey Murphy finally gets injury bug. Herb doesn't come back right. DeJounte just doesn't really mesh with the team. Willie Green gets fired. Like, and they are 30-52. And that pick ends up 6. And now instead you're picking 18. And you would have had the rights to 6. That's when it looks bad. But unless, like I said, but there's 3 scenarios. 2 of them are net positives. Either both of you guys made the playoffs. Who cares about that pick? Both of you guys are bad. You're in the range of the early pick. Or both teams are god awful. One team's god awful, which you could have had that pick, but instead you're stuck with the lower pick. Especially if your pick is the pick that's a bad pick. So there, you know, there was a lot of discourse. People are laughing at the Pelicans. People are slandering them, saying, oh, of course it is. It's Joe Dumars. Like our guy, old Joe Dumars. He's always doing something. Right? Like that, you know, like that's what's happening in New Orleans. You know, and I think it was a good move. I think that it's a move we will know the ramifications of in 12 months. I think it's a little bit hard to rule that right this second. It's a bad trade or it's a good trade or whatever. Like, I think that's hard to do because we won't know for another 12 months. We won't know whether the trade was a good trade or a bad trade for another 12 months because the team has to play. You know, obviously this wasn't a championship move. This wasn't like we traded that pick and ended up with Trey Young or something. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a championship level move. However, it was a move that gives us two guys who identify as lottery picks. I also think Joe Dumars kind of said it best in his thing. Let's say in his interview, let's say Derek Queen comes out and balls out. He's first team all rookie. He's clearly one of the best four or five rookies in the class, but we get hit with an injury bug. And now we pick seven. Well, guess what? Derrick Queen's one of the top five rookies in the class. So he's really effectively top five pick. Derrick Queen's a baller. And he ends up, you know, right in that rookie of the year race or in the area of, and it doesn't matter if you trade another good rookie. You already got your good rookie. You basically drafted him a year early. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. I still think it was a good deal. It's going to age either really, really well or really, really poorly, depending on the team's performance next year. But I think it was a good move. I definitely think it was laughable. I definitely don't think we should be getting slandered all over national media for, you know, being dummies and having Joe Dumars and LOL, the Pelicans are the Pelicans, and what are they doing? And no, it doesn't take all that, right? Like, at no point does it take all that. But it definitely, it's a calculated risk of a trade, because if he's wrong, and let's say Derrick Queen is not all that great, and that pick becomes like number two, and you got a pick in the 20s, okay, now it's a bad move. If those, you know, both those picks in the 20s, who cares? If both those picks top five, top seven, who cares? It's just, there's a massive gap, and you could really use that pick, and it goes to Atlanta instead. That's the only thing. But that is all I have for you guys today. Absolutely great basketball show. Great NBA season. But, of course, in this business, you don't last very long as far as being the key topic of discussion. Don't forget to follow at NextGen_Cornerstone Consulting as they were the sponsor for today's show. And also, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, as always, this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.